The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. It is a sweltering Thursday. It is a little after 4 o'clock and close to triple digits. It sure feels like it outside. So be careful if you have to be out and about. I'm trying to be a little wiser this time. Last week, I couldn't leave the office until around 11, and that's when we got started cutting the grass.
See, I think you just surrender the yard to the heat for the next month or so. You just say the sun wins.
I can't do it. I mean, Husky's back, but there's a break in his line. That's the problem now. So I'm gonna have to do it. But I'm gonna take off tomorrow and try to get started early. And the pool will probably call me
much of the same 90 plus from the moment the sun's out tomorrow. Yeah,
but I mean, it's not going to be nearly as bad at like 9 o'clock as it will tomorrow afternoon. So, yeah. Anyway, if you have to be out and about, have to be outside, do be careful.
And if you don't have to be outdoors, I strongly recommend staying out of the heat almost entirely, because this is brutal stuff.
Yeah, it
is. Quickly, you're feeling the effects of it.
Oh, no question about it. So that's Dan. I'm Bill. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, also along here on the Thursday Drive.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm all right. It's been a pretty busy week so far, and then you look up and it's like, oh yeah, fall camp's next week. So
Big Cat in a couple of days.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Fall camp next week.
You were doing some work with the OA News this week. You were
saying? It's a month. We're a month away from the start of high school football season as well. What's now week zero in high school ball. So yeah, a whole lot going on this week. Looking forward to actually covering some actual football. You know, next week with practice getting started, and then, you know, high school just around the corner. It's going to be a lot of fun. It still feels like it's, you know, obviously nowhere near the fall.
This is the way it feels at the start of football practice, though.
Yeah, 100 million degrees outside. But, no, it's good, and obviously Auburn picking up, I'm sure. I mean, it was the beginning of y'all's show yesterday with the DeMarcus Riddick news, and they're going to try to carry that into Big Cat this weekend.
Yeah, no question. DeMarcus Riddick, yeah, we had it yesterday. I was expecting like a lot of pre-talk and things like that, and it was just like, Mom, here's your present. Reach in the bag, pull out the hat. Hey, there it is.
I like it. You know, the hat fake-out's always a good one. Big-time pickup for Auburn. We were talking before we got on the air, like the last time Auburn's gotten a guy that you could consider a recruiting win over both Alabama and Georgia, like a big one. And it's been a minute. And so really good, like, first kind of superstar flip pull that this staff has gotten. And there could be some more, you know, coming up here in the next few days or weeks.
Yeah, well, there are some possibilities coming in this weekend.
Absolutely. Huge Big Cat weekend. And it was like, I think there were Auburn fans – and I get it. You know, there was a decent amount of Auburn fans I saw online yesterday that were kind of, you know, psyching themselves out of it at the last moment, and you know, thinking, oh, you know, it's gonna come back and bite us. So you've been burned before. But I just kept going back to the fact that DeMarcus Riddick was going to go to Big Cat this weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's going to be hard to show up to Big Cat after committing to Alabama.
I mean, I haven't
staying with Georgia.
I wasn't close enough to the situation to offer a prediction or anything like that. I have a terrible crystal ball when it comes to high school recruits. But we had
I have a couple of guys who cover recruiting that I trust and I talk to, and that's about it.
We had Clemente on the Observer podcast, and Christian Clemente talked about DeMarcus Riddick telling people he was going to be at Big Cat weekend, and I think Clemente noted at the time, well, he's got a commitment a couple of days before Big Cat weekend, and if he's telling people, not just reporters, it seems like other prospects had been told, Riddick's saying he's going to be there, and if he's telling folks he's going to be at Big Cat weekend and he's got a commitment earlier that week, It seems like that lines up very well for Auburn, and sure enough, that's where that's where things have ended up, and he's going to be at Big Cat Weekend, and there's going to be, I think, a lot of excitement around his presence at Big Cat Weekend, because he's, at the moment, unless things change, I know Cadillac tweeted out something late last night that has people wondering if there could be more news about a we think Riddick will be Auburn's latest commitment when Big Cat Weekend starts, but
yeah, when it starts,
could change. There could be more news before the end of the week. And it was Jason yesterday saying he wouldn't be surprised at all if there was a new commitment before the weekend was over. If someone at Big Cat Weekend decides that's where they're going to announce that they're coming to Auburn for the class of 24. So yeah, there could be more recruiting news on the horizon with Riddick making his announcement at the beginning of the show yesterday.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking for like good news, good signs, you're like, oh, that, you know, kind of like the thing with DeMarcus Riddick. You know, Perry Thompson, a lot of Perry Thompson stuff on social media has kind of been leaning towards Auburn, or at least, you know, making people get excited about the potential of him flipping. The fact that he's coming to Big Cat as a guy who's an Alabama commit, who when he left his official visit from Auburn saying it was 50-50, there's a lot of momentum with Auburn
and the thing to watch is, I mean, Alabama's still trying to get him to their barbecue this weekend.
Yep.
Would Perry Thompson be Auburn's biggest receiver signee since Tim Hawthorne? And I know Tim Hawthorne, maybe bigger than that, but I mean Hawthorne was
Auburn's only ever signed one composite 5-star wide receiver ever.
And that was
Ben Obomanu.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking Hawthorne was he the state's top receiver?
Yeah, Obomanu's the only one who's ever been a composite 5-star. And so
yeah, and of course, I mean,
and like if Nate Craig would have stayed healthy his senior season, he would have had a really good chance to stay a 5-star as well. But, you know, they've had some really good ones. I mean, like, you know, Kyle Davis, Darius Slayton. I mean, they've had Seth Williams, like really, really high 4-stars. But 5-star, this elite kind of level, Auburn just has not had.
Well, I remember a really highly touted one that after his first day on campus, you knew he was overrated, and that was Willie Northern. Willie Northern was a guy that came in talking big time smack. He came in highly touted out of Florida. I think had everybody back then had everybody fooled. I believe it was that was early Tubbs. And then when he came in, he ran about a 4.8, and he got hit by a couple of defensive backs and was never heard from again.
Wow.
But things have changed. It's a lot more there's a lot more accuracy in projecting. It's still, you're projecting guys.
The fact that you have four major services all going after it, and you can combine those kind of ratings, I think is a really good sign. But yeah. So, I mean, everybody will have the eyes on Perry Thompson. KJ Bolden will be here this weekend. I think that one's going to be really tough to pull off, but, you know, that's just me just kind of spitballing there. But some really high 4-stars coming into town this weekend that some of them I think could be on commitment watch for Auburn. And 25 kids in, 26. You got one 27 kid that's going to be the 27 kid, I think, for everybody around here in Trent Seaburn. So it's shaping up to be a weekend fitting of its name, and you would have thought with this staff and the guys that they assembled and the emphasis they put on recruiting that the first Big Cat weekend would be a blowout event.
Oh yeah,
and it really is shaping up to be that.
So that's going to be really interesting. I mean, it's just Saturday though, right? Isn't it just Saturday?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people say Big Cat Weekend, but it's Saturday when they all come in, and I mean, some may opt to stick around on their own, but I mean, Big Cat is
because these are all unofficials,
right?
Usually,
I think I misspoke calling him a 5-star, but I believe Perry Thompson would be Auburn's top receiver signee since Tim Hawthorne, because I think Tim Hawthorne was a top 50 player nationally.
That sounds right.
Auburn has not signed a top 50 player nationally at wide receiver since the 2006 season.
Yeah, because I don't think Kyle and Darius were at that level. Nate wasn't either.
Caleb Burton was a top 75 player coming out of high school. It's not the same thing because he's transferred in after a year at Ohio State. But I think
that's just on 247, so the composite wasn't as strong for him. I remember seeing that.
But still, we're going back 20 years with these names. You talk about Ben Obomanu and Tim Hawthorne and guys like that. I mean, it tells you how long it's been since Auburn signed a consensus impact wide receiver out of high school.
I remember when I wrote a story because it was when Auburn was still going after Cam Coleman too. It was like, you know, Nate Craig was a five. He's like, no, he wasn't. No, he was a five at some point. Well, that doesn't count.
I thought.
Well,
he was a five.
I tell you what's and
yeah, it was a lot of that, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to argue.
Well,
with that.
Somebody should may have had five. Him like that, but what's crazy is the DeMarcus Riddick thing. Mm-hmm. DeMarcus is not a five star on any of the four, but a composite five star
because
there's some guys that are rated much lower.
Yeah, there's so much variance. He's
right there on the cusp of five star, and when you combine everybody's, he's in that group.
And that's 247's composite. On3's composite has the same thing as well.
Yeah,
You rarely do you have a guy who's not a five star that everybody thinks is around the same level. And so for DeMarcus Riddick, everyone's convinced this is a top 40, top 50 player in the country. And when you do that, I mean, there will be five stars in every class that somebody thinks is not quite as good.
And they may be right. I mean, there will be. I mean, there's no way it's not perfect. There's going to be a player or two every year who is a five star that doesn't pan out.
And it's like if you will have guys all the time. Keldrick Falk's a great example. Keldrick Falk was a five star by Rivals, wasn't a five star by everybody else. There was gaps between it. Riddick's very rare because usually outside of the elite prospects, you normally have like one outlet saying, we think of him here, and somebody else is doing something completely different, and that's where you get the gaps. I mean, everybody's pretty convinced that this guy's an elite player. It's just maybe not the best of the best in this class, but still, I mean, that's first five star since Owen is something pretty.
How often do the services update these things, Bill? Like how often?
Every few months.
There could be another one during the high school season.
There'll be at least a couple of more updates before signing day, before the February signing day.
I was just thinking, even before he committed to Auburn, just the notion of Alabama and Georgia being after a guy. Like, I wonder if those recruiting services will take another look. The ones that have him as a four star might take another look and say, well, geez, why are the top programs?
Well, they were after him already, though.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, it's not he was committed to Georgia, so. Yeah, it's not like that's going to hurt you, knock you back or anything. So, anyway, a huge commitment yesterday. Today, and this is really crazy. I was telling Justin this when I came in. I just checked the roster yesterday. I was checking on a few things, and I noticed there were three number 20s on the roster yesterday. Well, today, there are two.
And that's Caden Bridges, right?
Yep.
You're referencing that is not on the – now, do we have anything beyond the fact that he's just not listed on the roster anymore with Caden Bridges?
A couple of folks have confirmed that he is no longer a part of the team.
I think it was Stoltz who pointed out on social media that this would mean there are two class of 21 signees remaining on the roster.
One from Kevin Steele's early signing period, that's Garner Langlow, and one from the late signing period. As a matter of fact, the next to the last signee, and that's Jarquez Hunter.
Yeah, so two players left from the class of 21,
I thought we'd go over that list.
2 years you have that much of attrition.
I didn't even include junior college or transfers.
They're all gone too.
These are all high schoolers. There were a total of 19.
Yeah, and if you wonder how a coach arrives in a situation where he feels he needs to add 42 new players to his team.
19 high school signees for 2021, and two of them are around.
That's incredible.
One's a redshirt sophomore, the other one's a true junior.
And the 20 class had a ton of attrition in it as well.
Yeah, but nothing like this.
No, this one's a different.
I mean,
this is one of the worst I've ever seen.
It's the worst I've ever seen at Auburn for sure. It's never been anything like this. We'll take a look at this as we move on.
Well, and it's a sign. It was a sign of a coaching staff in trouble too, because the one that comes to mind for me would be, I mean, I think it was 2008, right, where there was no one from that team left a couple of years later. Like I was, Tuberville's.
There were more than two guys
who were
contributors on the national championship team.
Guys on that team.
See, I think 2007 had a lot of the. I wonder. I don't have the class of 2008.
Hold on, I'll tell you.
Yeah, right in front of me.
I've got it.
I remember that was a roster I believe that was one that had a ton of turnover.
All right, let's do that one before we get to the break. Here's the 2008 signing class: Brandon Smith. Reggie Hunt, goodbye. Andre Wadley, Cam Henderson, Chandler Brooks, Eric Smith,
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Sam Brown, Torrey Childers, Harry Adams, Marcus Jemison, Vance Smith. We're getting there. Drew Cole, Raven Gray, the famous Raven Gray. Nico Lipscomb, who is Nico Thorpe. Jake Drum, Freddie Smooth, Derek Likes, Ken Adams, Ontario.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Christian Thompson.
I think Ontario arrived with the team later, though, because didn't he go to junior college at first? Wasn't there a year, a prep school year or something?
I think Ontario was a year of prep school.
Yeah, Ontario wasn't on the 2008 team.
Deshaun Barnes, Akeem Means, Philip Pierre Lewis.
Oh, wow, PPL.
Yep, Deron Plur.
Played intramural soccer with him.
I believe PPL injured on the opening kick of the opening game, and I don't know if he ever played again in an Auburn uniform.
Barrett Trotter.
Okay, there you go.
Tasharvin Bell. Derek Winter, Jamarcus Savage. So there were like
I remember five or six.
I counted five.
Winter, I remembered because I think we just recently talked about
those Derek are five Winter. Guys that were around for multiple
by
years.
The way,
they weren't just 2 years.
By the way, Derek Likes. I've discovered this week. Derek Likes, the only other player Auburn's ever gotten from Chilton County.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that.
I'd heard Derek Likes. I think that was, yes, that would have been the context of that.
He redshirted in 09, redshirted in 08. Played some games in 09 and then was off the team by either 10 or 11, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that was, yeah, that was.
Clanton, not necessarily a place where you get a ton of football talent traditionally.
Can I also say that the 2008 famously one of the, like, I mean, that was a year that is not fondly remembered for Auburn's recruiting prowess.
Things were going down. Things were changing.
So you found more examples in that year. Now, granted, we didn't have immediate eligibility for transfers, right? So there was more turnover nowadays than there was back then.
Yeah, the ability to replace those players is there now.
To have all but five guys gone 2 years after you signed them in 2010 was probably more concerning than now.
We've seen some classes where, I mean, and it wasn't that unusual for half a signing class to be gone in 2 or 3 years, for you to sign 24 and only 12 of them be around in a couple of years.
But an entire class.
But this is 17 of 19 high schoolers gone before their third season starts.
Before their third season starts. I mean, that is remarkable. Like it is, but
the thing is, some of these guys, there are a few of them who may help some folks at some point. I mean, Lee Hunter.
Mm-hmm. UCF.
I mean, D. Davis, Marquise Robinson, Hal Presley, Landon King.
Yeah, he'll help Utah.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few of the let's see. You've got, where's Amari Harvey now?
Where is Amari Harvey now?
I do not know. Ian Matthews, Kamal Haddon, A.D. Diamond. And those were the guys from the
early. Harvey's at Georgia Tech.
Okay. Those are the guys from early.
Kamal Haddon go to Tennessee.
He did.
One to Tennessee. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He's like starting at Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have gone to other places. Now, here are the late signees. Those were the Kevin Steele signees. Mm-hmm. The signees for Brian Harsin and his staff in the second signing period were Caden Bridges.
You're already gone.
Tavarish Dawson.
Already gone.
Juwan Gaston never got in.
Yep.
Colby Smith. Joko Willis. Jarquez. And Dylan Brooks.
Phew. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a lost class.
Completely. I mean, a completely lost class.
And that's why when I now look at the roster, it is so upper class laden, 25 seniors, 22 juniors, 10 sophomores, 9 redshirt freshmen, and 18 true freshmen.
Yep. Portal's going to have to be big.
The
next couple years.
Yeah, especially this year. And if you can find some guys, Portal and Junior College, I think, because if you bring Junior College guys in, they're in that year. You know,
how many
with the guys that would be sophomores moving up.
How many junior college guys in general come out of the junior college ranks to like impact in the SEC though? Like, is it a smaller number than it used to be? Like with the portal, it's always been
probably like a half dozen in the league.
It used to be that you would go to junior college because you wanted to go to that SEC school in a couple of years. And now if you have the opportunity to play D1 football somewhere else And you don't get into
it's
that
usually,
SEC.
It's usually for now for guys who have academic or something like that they can need to sort out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, some of those guys maybe go to a smaller school and then transfer their way into the SEC.
Yeah, because they used to, they didn't have that option back then. If they went to a smaller school, they'd have to sit out a year.
I could see Hugh Freeze bringing in another class next year, a lot of Group of Five guys. Like a lot of Group of Five guys that want to get their shot and get – you know, put some SEC film, you know, for the NFL draft and stuff like that. Like, I could see Hugh Freeze replenishing this roster with that because it feels like there's going to be a lot of those guys
I just think next year you want to avoid having as many one-and-done guys because, like I said, with a roster that's got 20-plus juniors right now, you don't want to add, you know, you don't want to have a senior class of 35 or then you're having to do it again even more the next year. You'd love to try to get some guys with a couple of years of eligibility next year.
Official, Colorado did the Big 12 in 24. They just passed the vote at CU.
Yeah, bye-bye Pac-12.
Mm. Man.
Yeah.
Especially if Oregon and Washington jump to the Big 10 like people are talking about today.
Well, they're sure hoping the Big 10 will let them in.
My new one now is now that Colorado's moving on, I need Utah in the Big 12. Just so I can get
Arizona State.
Give me BYU, Utah in the conference game.
I think the natural thing is going to be Arizona State, and Utah, and they go in and they got 16.
And then if you're you know the NorCal schools, Oregon State and Washington State, it's just like all right,
good luck.
It's going to be tough. I mean, this is what happens when you don't win that much.
Yep, and especially in the sports that matter. That's right.
Especially in the sports that matter.
All right, we're running way behind. Need to get to our first break of the afternoon here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join us. Come on in.
It's easier to Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls. As we're approaching the halfway mark of hour number one, so let's remind you that the first hour number one of the drive, brought to you by the good folks at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And, of course, they're also the sponsor of our hotline. One of the ways you can get through to us by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe. You're going to do it that way. Or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. We're talking a little bit about the conference realignment there before the segment. I had to get to break. I guess the next step would be, you know, does another Pac-12 team defect after Colorado leaving for the Big 12?
My question is just how quickly does the next one or three defect? Because, I mean, the Pac-12 is getting decimated. Southern Cal, UCLA gone to the Big 10, Colorado going to the Big 12. There's
one
not
would
much
think,
left.
One would think Colorado going to the Big 12 – and that would get them to 13 next year. One would think they would go get someone else.
I would think
or at least one.
That's why I was saying if they want to stay out there west, go the next three would make sense to go Colorado State.
Colorado and the Arizona schools.
The four corners programs.
You know, sort of what you know people in the Pac-12 call Colorado, Utah, and the two schools from Arizona. I could see them jumping into the Big 12 as a unit. I know Arizona's president spoke recently enough. You know, earlier this summer, and said, you know, we're gonna wait and see more about Pac-12 media rights before we get serious about expansion. But had noted the Big 12 as the likeliest destination, you know, for Arizona if they wanted to stay.
It is interesting, though. It's because, you know, you've got Oregon and Washington, and there's been talk about them going to the Big Ten. If the Big Ten goes to 18, does the SEC try to get to 18 and match, or do they hold firm where they're at?
Well, who's the likeliest?
In the meantime, Oregon and Washington, what happens to Cal and Stanford?
We were talking about Stanford as a school that because of
Cal could do it too.
Yeah,
going independent.
I think Cal's a school that if they wanted to join like the I mean, well, because there's also the question of what San Diego State's going to do and what happens to these Mountain West schools that are thinking about like making a move. Like, is do some of these schools move to the Mountain West and make the Mountain West a stronger league because now you've got Oregon State, Washington State, and Cal as part of the Mountain West? Does that make that league?
Yeah, because the Pac-12 was talking about adding San Diego State, and then it was right. Like, ah, never mind.
I don't know if San Diego State's looking to join that party right now.
No.
Like, you're seeing people leave.
Exactly. Exactly. That was the thing.
It's like showing up when the cops show up.
It was
right?
Like, okay, party, well, I'm not in this. It was okay, UCLA and USC are leaving. We need to replace. And then when they don't have anything with the media rights done, and now Colorado leaves. You know, that's the crazy thing about Colorado leaving is, like, no one's really talking about the fact enough that they used to be, like, at one point in time, they thought it was better for them to be out of the Big 12, and now they're coming right back in. Like,
I think it had to do,
hilarious.
But I think it had to do with the Texas stuff, right? Like, that Colorado leaving, I believe Colorado and Nebraska leaving the Big 12 was related to the Longhorn Network and, you know, sort of Texas's. And so now Colorado waiting until Texas is no longer in the league and deciding they were going to go back to the Big 12. So it's interesting that they waited until, you know, maybe the issue they felt strongest about with the Big 12.
I really want the Big 12 to pick up Utah. Arizona schools would be fun too. And if they get
Arizona,
to 16,
Kansas basketball, I mean,
they get
have
to 16. If they get to 16 and the Big Ten gets to 16 and the SEC's obviously at 16, it'd just be interesting to see what comes out in the end. Like, because the Pac 12 now you're down to the Pac 6 or whatever. It's rough. It's bleak.
What would make the most sense is to have four 16-team conferences.
The two no-Cal schools, Washington State and Oregon State, would be your four schools left in the Pac-12. Yeah. And it's like that those four joining a league together, or do you bring eight new schools into the Pac-12 and try to redo the Pac-12?
I don't think what the Pac-12 is going to end up offering is going to be better than what the Mountain West can give you. I don't think they're going to be at that point.
A merger between those two leagues or something? Where you
the thing is, that like the that. Problem is there's such distance between some of the schools that you're wondering about. You got East Coast and West Coast. You got some ACC and a couple of leftovers from the Pac-12 that, I mean, are out there that are more viable than some other schools to be in a conference, but they just don't fit in. You know, unless you start getting to an 18 or 20 team conference,
the power move would be for the ACC to like make a play and like really convince Notre Dame that hey, you're going to want to be a part of this for real. And I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I wonder if NBC that's the thing I wonder about with Notre Dame. Like, I don't know if there's more money in it for Notre Dame to be an equal partner in the ACC versus what they currently get from NBC. I would imagine.
I feel like there's room that we can kind of sort this out a little better. Like, for me, I would rather see, like, West Virginia in the ACC, having with Pitt and those schools. Obviously, they're in the Big 12. And then just kind of shape the Big 12 back around where you don't have to deal with that. I think that would be better.
I don't know.
To me, West Virginia fits better with Pitt and then the Virginia schools and all that more than they fit with having to go play, like, Arizona.
The thing that really messes all that up is USC and UCLA being in the Big Ten.
It's so dumb.
But not for them.
No, it's not for them.
Not for them at all. Look at that conference now. Look at the conference they just left.
They got to be in one of the Big Two, and that's great. Right. And that's great. But, like, also, it's just you're on an island out there. You know?
For now. I mean, we'll see. We'll see if they expand west in the Big Ten.
But where are they going to go?
Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, and then you're – okay, now it's a four-team island. Like, it's still – like, there's
four
still
is
like,
better
yeah.
than two, though.
It's still –
I mean, you only had two – when baseball went to the West Coast in the 60s, right? You only had two out there.
Right.
The National League. And then sure enough, you know, now you got a whole division. On the West Coast, so I could see it feels like the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the SEC are three leagues where if you're in right now, you better not give up your seat unless you know exactly what you're doing to go somewhere else. The notion of someone joining the ACC when they're to me the question is who's the likeliest ACC defector and where are they going?
Florida State and Clemson to the SEC.
I keep hearing North Carolina wants.
North Carolina.
Yeah, Carolina doesn't like the situation right now.
The schools don't
feel like they're getting what they are putting, that they're bringing in more than they're getting
back. Now,
I
will say this. I would love to see North Carolina in the SEC. They'd also really work in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would.
UNC, Virginia,
right.
Duke, like those teams would definitely fit. And I would love – I would personally – I think if the SEC ever had to go past 16, I think it's like, all right, markets don't matter.
The schools that fit Yeah, you mentioned Clemson and Florida State.
Florida comes to Florida. Just make yourself the football conference for the Southern United States. Just, we've got all the best teams. We've got all it fits here. Don't worry about saying, "Oh, it would love to." Markets don't matter anymore. We're in the cord cutting era.
Is that Florida? Is that Florida State, Clemson, Miami, and UNC?
I wonder if Miami doesn't sort of. Miami might think they fit better in the Big Ten.
Miami would fit better in the Big Ten, probably.
Expand east. So then you're Miami. Well, North, I don't know if North Carolina and Duke are splitting up.
I'm thinking
they could. They could. Yeah.
We got to take a break.
Yeah, we do. Okay. Rob, hang on. We're getting carried away. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll get to the Kia of Auburn hotline when we come back. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon, 21 minutes away from 5 o'clock, and let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Rob is up first. Hey, Rob.
Hey, I'm not surprised. I'm sure y'all aren't either about Colorado, and that was a bad fit. I think they were like Nebraska. They just had enough of Texas. And Texas, mark my words, when we go to Dallas next year for media days, Texas is going to try and take over. You know, you remember the Beverly Hillbillies episode when Uncle Jed was running for mayor of Beverly Hills and Jethro had the plane flying around town with a big banner. It said, "Jethro Bodine says vote for Jed Clampett." And there was a little picture of Jed in the corner. That's how they're going to try to make the SEC. I mean, don't kid yourself. They have a $42 billion endowment. You could take all the rest of the endowments in the SEC and combine them, and it still comes up way short. They're obnoxious about their money. So they drove. That's what we better be careful of. I'm glad they're coming to the league. But I do think Utah will come in to the Big 12, and I won't be surprised if Memphis comes in. That will not surprise me at all because they brought Cincinnati, Central Florida, and Houston, and Memphis has a long history of playing those schools. So
yeah, I was wondering why Memphis wasn't approached in the first place, Rob.
Well, here's what I'm guessing. I'm guessing Fred Smith has announced, the CEO and founder of FedEx, that he is going to step down. He's 78 years old, but he's still active. I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't some talks in the background, we could put a hub in Oklahoma City, or we could put a hub somewhere else in the Big 12 footprint. Dr. Hargrave from Auburn is the president at Memphis now. Y'all know him. Hell, I know him. Mm-hmm. And he was brought in to do this. I mean, he is getting – you wouldn't believe the support that he's getting from – and a lot of these are SEC people, but they live in Memphis. So I think the Big 12 will – add and get up to 16 pretty fast.
Yeah, they're sure not going to want to stop at 13 now.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's far from over. But for all of y'all, next question is in recruiting. And you look at, Perry Thompson. It's funny the way recruiting services are, but these guys were all five stars. And suddenly, right before Riddick commits to Auburn, he goes to a four and Perry Thompson is suddenly a four.
Nah, actually, DeMarcus hadn't changed here recently. He's been on the verge of being a five. What it is he's a consensus five, even though he's rated as a four by all the services, because he's a high four that averages out to a five.
Okay, because you know what I'm talking about, Bill, and just the way these recruiting services are. I mean, the days of Forrest Davis and that Kirby guy, Freddie Kirby up there in Muscle Shoals. I mean, those guys, Auburn could have signed the top 10 players in Alabama. And the lead story in the Birmingham News would have been Bama Lions' top prospect in the Dandy Dozen at number 11, lineman Bill Condon from Mobile. But I never bought into that, and you didn't either. But unfortunately, a lot of Auburn people believe the narrative.
Yeah, the thing is now, I mean, and Justin was saying this a while ago, you've got so many different folks doing it now that it's tougher. But sure, I mean, it's impossible when you look at the talent and the players that are going into the NFL from Alabama and Georgia and LSU, that if those schools are very interested in a player, he's going to get a high ranking because they don't miss on too many.
Back in the day when he was at Auburn, if he said that a defensive lineman, he really thought he was a hell of a player, you know, everybody would recruit him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens with us, but I guess what it is, Auburn people, the last 3 years, I mean, Gus averaged 8th-ranked class in the country in recruiting, but he went for stars more than he did for getting the right fits. Right now, Auburn's got, I think, 9 fours, and 2 threes. Is that correct? 12 total commitments?
It's 12, yeah.
Okay, so where did Auburn move to? I didn't even look. I've been
I think I heard on one Auburn is like 16.
Okay.
So, I mean, they took a big jump. Their average rating per player, I think, is number 7, though.
See, so for all of y'all, I mean, I know I'm talking to you, but Dan, you're smart. You know this stuff. I mean, are y'all more interested in average player ranking?
Well, right now, I think so, because you've got Auburn with 12, you got Georgia with 26. Sure, you ought to look at the average. The thing is, it's going to depend on, again, needs, too. And, I mean, no recruiting services, you know, has the time or the wherewithal to say, okay, this team needs this many of this, that many of the other. So all you can do is go by either the total number or the average number. But, I mean, it's July, and players don't sign until either December or February. So it's a long way to go. So that's why average right now, I think, is very important to look at.
Great stuff, Rob. Appreciate the phone call. Always happy to hear from our buddy Rob in Memphis.
Running behind. Yeah, we're going to try to get caught back up and get back on track. We'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. This is the Thursday Drive.
It's easier to handle at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 11 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, and back to the Kia of Auburn Hotline, and Jerry's next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering, is Cam Coleman coming to Big Cat?
No.
He's not?
Well, not that I know of. I haven't seen anybody listing him.
Yeah, no, he's not. He has not been. The reports have not included him as someone they're expecting. I mean, you don't want to rule it out or you never say never, all that stuff. At the moment, doesn't sound like he's expected as one of the attendees.
Yeah, I mean, Perry Thompson is a very highly touted receiver coming in. Malcolm Simmons from Alex City is a 4-star receiver who's coming in. Those appear to be much more higher on the priority list right now.
Oh, okay. I hope they're having it at the lake because it's going to be so hot.
It is going to be. You're absolutely right about that. Well, it's usually. All right. Appreciate the call, Jerry. Justin, talk a little bit about. I mean, it's funny. I heard some folks talking about the Alabama barbecue and saying, well, this is going to be really different because it's not going to be a high pressure recruiting and competition thing. That's not ever what Big Cat has been.
No, it's. It's basically like, hey, dead period's over. This is your last push before everybody.
It's sort of like fun day.
Come on in. Everybody come up. You can relax. You're going to have fun. You're about to play. You're about to go into high school football season. Your senior years for most of these guys. Some of them, you know, else are juniors and others. But, like, you know, this is the big blowout before everybody gets into football mode, including Auburn itself.
It's because
if you're making visits or whatever during the season, it's a different vibe. It's a different atmosphere because not only, I mean, you're a priority, but you're not the priority right now. You're the priority in recruiting,
right? And I mean, it's an opportunity. It's always been something where if it goes well, it's a great opportunity for a lot of people to get to know each other better in a little more relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah. No. It's. It's a good time for you know, guys just to, I think, get in the last kind of big blowout. Oh, this is the last big recruiting thing. and just, you know, hey, football is about to be here, and it's going to be a grind for the next several months. It's going to be a grind for us too. So let's just have a good time. And for these guys also, it's like it's your last big shot, basically, before, you know, there's an increasing number of these kids now are going to want to make decisions before their senior years of high school. They want to go ahead and get it out of the way. They want to focus on their football in the fall, and then sign and move on. And so it's kind of like your last big gasp. Like, all right, this is your, you know, this is where you go and try to make that last impression before some of these guys make their decisions. Those who are going to in August, and that's the other reason why the early signing period needs to be moved up.
There's team building sort of emphasized at this. You know, the notion of even if you're not a team yet, you know, the thought that you might create bonds with coaches that decide, you know, that allow you to, that could influence your decision to come to Auburn. You might establish bonds with other guys who are there that influence your decision to come to Auburn, and it's a way to show Auburn in a positive light for folks who have not been to the campus before or have only been to the campus once or twice. So I mean, it was a very successful venture when it was introduced by Chizik and company in the summer of 2009. I want to say it was your first Big Cat weekend would have been Chizik's first year, summer 2009.
It was like, late spring, wasn't it?
I think it was summer.
Early summer. Yeah, maybe early. It was earlier than this.
Because the story I remember from 2009 was that football players, I think it was after the term was over in the spring.
Yeah, I'm thinking guys, it was June.
Because guys came back to campus to do it. Like guys who weren't on campus, you know, came back and stuff. So I think it was, maybe it was June then. But yeah, it's been a successful innovation for Auburn since it was since it was introduced by Gene Chizik, and the hope is that it can land some significant players or play a role in some significant players coming to play for Hugh Freeze.
Yeah. Now let me ask you, Justin, if you've heard anything, because I've had a couple of people ask me, and I see where another one of Auburn's offensive line targets is heading elsewhere. Jamison Riggs going to Georgia Tech. That's the area where I'm getting the only concerns I get from anybody is, are we going to get any offensive linemen?
The big guy from California coming in this weekend.
DeAndre Carter.
Yeah, that's a big one. Literal big one
huge.
To watch.
It's like 340 or something.
Yeah, I would keep an eye on him. Yeah, for Auburn in this class, I think you're going to want to sign several offensive. That's the one where you're like, right now, you need to kind of make up some ground. In recruiting, and so Carter is the one that I think of the big name dudes. You're gonna want to keep an eye out on him because I know Auburn has made him a pretty big priority. Coming out from, he plays at Matter Day, I believe. I think that's right.
Yeah, I can look that up.
And was a starter at Matter Day as a junior, which is pretty impressive.
May 29th, by the way.
Is that right? Okay.
May 29th, 2009.
Couple weeks after the term ended, but not nearly as deep.
I knew it was earlier. Yeah. But I think he and Reese Baker, the offensive lineman from Madison Academy, are the two linemen who are coming in this weekend. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that they need to make up ground. But we also know that the offensive line is a position group where you can do some more developing, and it takes a little bit more time. But you would like to get more of those big name guys.
Yeah, it'd be good to have them in here to develop and not have to be relying on the transfer portal.
Absolutely.
Every year for
depth is important, and
line.
I think they did a really good job of getting depth in the 23 class, guys that can build up. But, you would love to get blue chips on your offensive line. And Auburn's still got a shot at some of them, but, this is not going to be like a five-star loaded class on the line, it looks like, right now.
334-321-1390. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson. Justin, while we got a minute or so, talk a little bit about what's going on at The Observer and how folks can get it.
Yeah, you can sign up at auburnobserver.com at $6 a month or $60 for the full year. Got a lot of stuff. There's a full DeMarcus Riddick breakdown on the site that went up yesterday. If you want to check that out, a lot of film in there of him. Mailbag out tomorrow. It's a pretty fun one. A little bit of a curveball at the beginning, not necessarily the normal mailbag question we get up front, but it's a fun one. And then we'll have a podcast up tomorrow morning as well. Dan and Painter and I will be talking DeMarcus Riddick. We'll be talking some other stuff going on with Auburn football heading into the
the big fall camp that starts next week.
Yeah, you got Hugh Freeze probably. I mean, we're thinking Tuesday, Wednesday. Haven't gotten official. Haven't gotten an official schedule yet. Expect one.
Hopefully this weekend.
Any minute now, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the expectation that Hugh Freeze will probably be talking to the media on Tuesday or Wednesday, and then Auburn getting ready for fall camp as we, was it 5 weeks? 5 weeks from Saturday? We're coming up on 35 yes. days before the...
Yep, 37 days.
Until the Auburn opener, so...
All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday drive. Love for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up. Welcome into hour number two here on the Thursday drive. Hope everybody doing well, trying to stay as cool as you can. Yeah, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
I have a tough time doing it. but then it's better. I got to let it out every once in a while.
There you go.
All right. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, Drew at the controls here in hour number two of the drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can join us by calling the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. That's all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Yeah, we talked a good bit in hour number one. A couple of things. Talked a little more about the commitment yesterday from DeMarcus Riddick, the outstanding linebacker from Chilton County High School there in Clanton. Big Cat, which Auburn's bringing back Big Cat. And Justin, I said this a couple of times earlier, and I think, at least I feel like this is the case, probably the most excited that Auburn fans have been about Big Cat since back in the early days, maybe the first one.
Yeah, no, probably so. Yeah, because I think like when they brought it back in the Harsin era, it was like, okay.
Oh yeah,
generate yeah. some. It was like the PR blitz that was trying to like, hey, this is actually not going to be terrible. And yeah.
Well, but it's the attendees that make a Big Cat weekend special, right? You can throw this amazing party as a coaching staff, but if you haven't been doing the work on the recruiting trail, and if you haven't been convincing kids that this is a place where they should play, then it could be like, oh boy, Bill, was it Junior Day last year? Junior Day
they canceled.
Exactly. So you can plan an excellent event, but if the message is not resonating on the recruiting trail, it could get a lot of no thank yous in the RSVPs for the invitation to send out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's coming up on Saturday. We talked about that. Talked about more possible conference realignment with Colorado confirming they're out of the Pac-12 after this year.
Yeah, and
good job, Colorado.
Well, the Pac-12.
I still think you're going 1-11 this year.
They've been in a few conferences now because they were
Big Eight
before they were Big 12, mm-hmm. and then Pac-12.
I mean, I understand why folks are leaving that league though. I mean, it's a league where it feels like they could be the
you don't want to be the last one.
Yeah, they could be the odd team out. You know, they could be the odd league out as far as having a lucrative television deal with a network or a group of networks. The Pac-12 has been unusually sort of cagey about what the future could be TV-wise for the network, and the fact that you had, media days, the commissioner sort of downplayed the lack of an announcement, and now it sounds like the impending announcement or whatever the Pac-12 heard from potential partners about the next media deal concerned Colorado enough to immediately leave the conference.
And apparently Oregon's in talks
right.
as well.
So I think teams that, programs that view themselves at or near the top of college athletics, if you're a top 50 program, if you're mm-hmm. a top 75 program, you're not going to drift into irrelevance in a league that's not providing you the money of your peers and not providing you the competition of your peers. And so I think that the first step was USC and UCLA leaving, but the inability of the Pac-12 to respond to that in a meaningful way. Yeah, now you've got Colorado out. Arizona State and Utah are probably looking at the Big 12 too, if that's a real option. Oregon and Washington feel like logical fits if the Big Ten wants to continue expanding to the West. Cal and Stanford mm-hmm. could also be in the Big Ten potentially, or they could stay somewhat independent or add to a different league's profile. But the Pac-12 as a conference that is. I don't know. Like this thing feels like it's headed the way of Big East football, right? Like we're going towards some of these leagues. They can't hold on to the most important members. I think the Big 12 has actually done a pretty good job, convincing other schools to stay around in the aftermath of Texas and Oklahoma.
I agree. Yeah,
Same thing could have happened to the Big 12 after Texas and Oklahoma.
And a lot of people thought it would. They thought, boy, Texas and Oklahoma leaving, that's the end of the Big 12. It's going to dissolve. Where are they going to go? They actually came up with an idea of recruiting some other schools, and they're much more viable now, obviously, than the Pac-12.
I still wonder what kind of football is going to be played in that new Big 12. I think it was somebody on social media said, fun, but it's entirely possible Georgia signs more 5 stars this year than that league does. So, right. It's...
Okay. I think it's a better football league than the ACC.
At the top?
Yeah. Well, from top to bottom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about at the top.
Yeah, Clemson and Florida State. Yeah.
Clemson, Florida State, maybe Miami.
Maybe Miami. It's not a very deep league, though.
No, it's not.
Yeah. And TCU wasn't the championship game last year, but I do wonder. I think it's a fun league. I also don't know if – we'll see if it can produce – even in the expanded postseason era, like a national champion or a real, TCU was just in the game year, but they don't have any
like blue chip ratio teams. Obviously, ACC would have Clemson and Florida, and Miami's trying to get back into that range. But yeah,
how's Carolina recruited of late? Is Carolina
good,
signing? And yes, is Carolina good, signing?
But
in
not
that?
Not. Not quite at the level they need to get in there, but you did really well.
Yeah.
Really well for sure. And I think, I'm just very curious to see where this all ends up at the end. If I would love.
Like a 2014 Big 12?
Yeah, that would be fun. I just don't know how we're going to do it.
Each be the Big 12.
That's why it's 12?
Big 12 West, Big 12 East,
Big
or whatever.
12 times 2.
Yeah. Well, they see East and West.
The big dozens. Yeah. The big 12s. Mm-hmm. With an S.
Yeah, there we go.
Could get really unruly when you get out of football season and into like basketball and baseball and things like that. But it's,
they don't care about any of that.
It does feel like all the expansion is football oriented.
Oh,
right?
It is.
It's about just being able to play
teams in your own division, in your own geographical area, and then play the two division champs for the conference.
There were
title.
ACC people, but back when they took Virginia Tech and Boston College and Miami, right? There were ACC people thinking, well, this league, this does nothing to us as a basketball league, and it doesn't really help the sure enough, that's not really what it's about, right? I guess even when Florida State joined the league, there were people saying, well, this is, for a league that used to let basketball choose a lot of the priorities, like that era is over.
Oh,
and now, aside from what the Big East, right? Like you don't really have a prominent conference that's, where men's basketball is the calling card anymore, or can be for a primary league. Like, all these decisions are being made with football in mind.
Yeah.
As far as conference realignment decisions, feels
the only
like football
other ones
is
are
the,
like the other ones are like the basketball only conferences, like the Big East. You've got little pockets.
And
of
that's not to say basketball.
West Coast has set itself up really well.
Yeah, and men's basketball and baseball are sports where we're seeing. Texas and Oklahoma and USC and UCLA aren't just schools that have had some success in football.
No, you're right.
We're seeing other sports too, but it does feel like primarily like at the conference realignment level, you're deciding what kind of football league you want to have, and then the other sports are just sort of like they have to find a way to exist in the landscape of let's make moves with presenting the strongest possible with assembling the strongest possible football conference in mind.
We'd love your thoughts on this or anything going on in the world of sports. 334-321-1390.
What's the Joe Burrow thing? I saw that happen earlier.
Calf injury today.
Yeah, so, like, okay. Calf injury. Which, you know, I always get nervous and think Achilles.
So, start at camp, there were a few guys got hurt today that I saw.
You always get nervous and you think Achilles when you hear about a calf injury with a player. Maybe it's not that significant. I saw the tape. It was already a wrapped up calf that he then sort of has a non-contact injury on. So hopefully Joe Burrow has become one of my favorite NFL players. Like, I mean, this guy's
Jalen Ramsey got carted off that today at Dolphins camp. Yeah, like there's always it's the beginning of camp.
Difficult to, you know, an easy guy to root for in Joe Burrow.
And Burrow.
Yeah, hopefully he's okay because he's exciting.
Jalen Ramsey. It depends on who you talk to.
That's true. But with Burrow, like, yeah, I hope he's okay and has had an outstanding start to his NFL career and could be injured. We'll see if we hear more about that.
Is Josh Jacobs still the only one holding out of the running backs?
Did everyone else come to a?
Saquon finally signed another 1-year deal that will allow him to get tagged again next year. So he's just going to be stuck like this forever. Josh Jacobs is the last.
Isn't there
one.
A Jonathan Taylor situation? Isn't there somewhere he's like?
There might be something.
I think
that,
he's feuding with Jim Irsay and talking about not playing if he doesn't get a new contract before the season. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. It seems like there was even a question to Quinshon Judkins about this in media days last week. The question about running backs and their perceived value in the NFL, where, I mean, the strategy for so many NFL teams is you draft a running back, you get as much as you can out of him,
and then when
he wants a new contract, it's time to draft. And so running backs are saying, well, all right, well, then I want the new contract now with several years left before you throw me away. Give me one right now. And
Give me a rookie contract that's more in line with like how a quarterback's rookie contract.
Or be ready to renegotiate the moment I become a big part of the team.
Or a wide receiver.
And that's, you know, I guess that's sort of Jonathan Taylor's perception is, you know, his stance on this is, I've been a huge part of the Colts for the last couple of years. Your plan is to use me until it's time for me to sign a new contract and then – yeah. Probably not give me that new contract, so I want my new contract right now. And if you don't like it, I'm not going to show up to work. Like that's seemingly what's going on in Indianapolis right now. And I wonder if it's the start of running backs maybe being a little bit more vocal about, hey, like this is a great system for everyone but the running backs.
Yeah, but I mean once it's gotten that way, I mean. Why should management do anything except okay, we'll find somebody quicker.
That's sort of the stance of the Indianapolis Colts right now is, you know, that they're going to wait and see, but if they need to go,
why
find
should we pay you for multiple years when, you know, we feel like we can find somebody maybe not as good as you are right now, but it'll be a whole lot cheaper for us to do it and then find somebody. So I mean, that's going to be interesting to follow. I wanted to ask Justin something we were talking about yesterday. A good bit. We got into the two bills that have been proposed in Congress, trying to put a handle on NIL and the transfer portal. That's something I didn't expect there to be. I didn't expect there to be proposed bills in Congress that would try to slow things down in the transfer portal as well. Do you think either or maybe a combination of the two have a chance?
I really don't know, because I'll be honest, I hear NIL legislation and my eyes immediately glaze over. Like, I'm just like, ah, okay, it's out of my depth. But something's got to be done, and I don't know who it's going to be. That's the thing, is like, you don't know who it's going to be. And I just keep coming back to the fact that the NCAA screwed this up so badly from the very beginning by being like, well, we're going to go against it. We're going to drag our feet so much.
No. Okay, whatever.
And then governments were like, okay, the government was like, well, no, you can't tell them no. All right, let's let it rock. Like, having everyone be on the same playing field in terms of what the rules are and the, like, that makes sense. If you want to continue to have this organization, if you want to continue to have college football and major college athletics still be, hey, we're going to try to find a national champion out of all this. If everybody wants to play by different rules, well, they can all go play
in those camps, high school football
where we have state champions because we're not going to be able to determine a national champion if people aren't playing with
conference symbols. Champions or something like that. Like, you know, like, and that becomes the big deal, right? It becomes more in line with like European soccer, where like, yeah, you might have the Champions League and all come together, but like, your conference becomes the thing that you want to win. That's because you don't play by the same rules everywhere, and so I think that's something's got to be done. I just don't know if I trust the U.S. government.
Sure. Well, the commissioner made it sound as though.
But I don't know who's going to fix it.
No, that's the thing. And now that they're sort of.
I surely don't trust the NCAA to fix it.
That's what's funny about it. I mean, Tuberville and Manchin's proposal tries to give power back to the NCAA, whereas the other creates its own group really got the power.
Right. So people don't. I mean, they have to be reactive about this because, yeah, I mean, if you were setting up a system 10 years ago before these laws were passed, you could probably do other things. But the tone I got from the commissioner's words last week were that one of the biggest problems is sort of the unregulated nature of agents in this process. And I do wonder if you require a governing body or a regulatory agency or something that covers player representatives, agents that are specifically for college athletes – I guess that's the thinking of the bill, right? You can police this through policing the agents and the representatives that are negotiating these deals if you're requiring everyone to doing that to be licensed.
And report what you're doing.
And report what they're doing.
The deals.
I hadn't really thought that you could try to narrow this, you know, by going after whether it's the middlemen or the deal makers or things like that, but I guess that is one tactic. I do wonder about what about instances where it's just a player negotiating on his own behalf. Like, is that going to limit their ability? Do you require someone to have
that would actually really put a lot of pressure on? I mean, if there's a player that just gets feels like, oh, I got a mom and pop deal here. What have I got to do paperwork wise? What legally do I have to do and everything? So. I don't know.
Yeah, I just think it's an interesting way to attack this, to try to police agents and managers and representatives of college athletes and require them to be certified and empowering, you know, whatever body is going to regulate that with subpoena power. Like it's an interesting way to go about it, and I wonder if it would. If it would cut back on sort of the perception that this is lawless and the Wild West.
Well, as we were talking a while ago about conference expansion and super conferences, that if there were just two or three super conferences, it would be easier then for those conferences, you would think, to try to come up with some framework that everyone could try to at least abide by.
Well, you think like the more centralized the power is, if you have three commissioners making decisions, it might be. No, I think there's probably something to that. I mean, if as much power as at least can be in the hands of the commissioners and the conferences at that point, yeah, I think probably.
I mean, because at least if they've got commissioners like Greg Sankey, I think Greg Sankey doesn't want to be doing this because it only is his conference. But if he and the other conference commissioners, were to be able to get together and go, okay, look, we need to stay here. What they would love, obviously, I mean, they all want someone else to solve the problem for them.
The other thing that's tough about NIL entirely is that it's all rumor and innuendo. Like we don't know any of, like, we're hearing stories and in some cases people are willing to this happened, but it's like we have, you know, when we talk about DeMarcus Riddick, right? Like, we have no idea what role NIL played in his decision yesterday. Could be some, could be none, right? Could be a large part of it.
And it's really interesting because I've had some people tell me that is just made up. That's make believe. There's no way that kind of money is going. It's monopoly money. It's not. And then I have other people that I feel like know what they're talking about saying, oh, they're way underestimating some of these numbers, and those people say it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable.
It's a bubble.
Because the people that say there's no way it's that kind of money go, you know, if everybody just chipped in a little bit here and there, that'd be enough to cover it. And it's like no, it's a lot more than some folks are willing.
Well, I've
to realize.
I mean, we've said that on the show before, and Justin, I think you've chimed in on this, that the, I mean, I think it's nice to have sort of crowdfunded NIL efforts, but it feels like the real influencers in that space are going to be people with a ton of disposable income that feel like, yeah, I'm an eccentric billionaire, and I really want to see my teams, you know, I want to see my school's college football team do well.
Yeah, I'm tired of this. I want to win. I want to win big. And I think I want to win now.
It's those folks and not the folks chipping in, you know, $8 a month. To help the local program, you know, sponsor somebody.
We need to get to our first break of hour number one. Keith, Brett, hold on, guys. You're up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
This is Dan Peck from ESPN.
At the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. And let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Keith is up first. Hey, Keith.
Hey, yeah, I heard y'all mention Jeff Burrow a while ago, and that kind of made me think of something. You know, I've been wondering, isn't Peyton Thorne a son of a coach?
Yes.
And where is he at in his school? Is he like
he's a fourth-year junior.
Peyton Thorne was high school class of 19.
Yep.
So
he can play two more years.
Yeah, he is a fourth-year junior.
2 years of eligibility left with the COVID-19 extra year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, I know that when Burrow came back that second year, going into that year, I've got some real close relatives from Louisiana, and they wasn't real up on Burrow going into that year, and he just was there to play football.
He had real average numbers his first season as a starter at LSU, and then a year later, you know, sets all these records. And a big thing for him is that he had already had his degree, and according to folks in Baton Rouge, it was like he had some online classes, but he was training and practicing and playing like he was already in the pros at that point. Like, it was all football for him, and that was so huge for a quarterback to do that.
Yeah, he was like a coach on the field, and
absolutely.
I was just you know, curious to where Peyton was at that point. I mean, is he at this place where he can study mainly football, but at least he can dream, I guess. The other thing is, I know that Hugh Freeze is from kind of the same coaching tree or background as Gus Malzahn, and they got some similarities or whatever. But, you know, I always wondered why when Gus came to Auburn, when we didn't ever see that offense that he ran with Darren McFadden and that other guy, you know, when he was at Arkansas. I mean, that was so effective. And, you know, I know that we didn't have Darren McFadden and that other guy, but, you know, to me, it was mainly based on speed. And, you know, I actually liked the wing T offense that he had in 2013 better, but, you know, that was so effective, you know, and it was basically just, you know, reverses mainly is what it looked like to me, you know.
Yeah, he had to evolve his offense in a number of areas, and I think you go back to 17 where he brings Chip Lindsey in and they open it up a little bit more of the vertical passing game. That was kind of really the last big evolution of it. But yeah, his stuff at Arkansas, his stuff he ran at Tulsa was different than that. I think, you know, you could even make the argument, like you point out, like the stuff they did with Cam in 2010 was different than what he ended up doing 3 years later with Nick Marshall and those guys. So I think it was just kind of more of the offense. He crafted the offense to the guys that he had. And on that team, when you have the talent that they had at Arkansas that year, they had those kind of weapons that they wanted to use in that way. And it just evolved and changed over time at Auburn. And I mean, I don't know how many folks watched him at UCF last year. There was a lot of stuff at UCF that he hadn't done in a while.
You know, the novelty of what he was doing in 2006, I think, really took some people by surprise. I mean, even at the NFL level, was it Saban? Or was it the team after? It was the team after Nick Saban when started running Ronnie in Wildcat formations and stuff with the Dolphins. Like, you saw
that was a.
Maybe it was after Saban.
It was still like a.
I mean, it was a situation
was
where
name?
You.
Was that, Sperano? Was that Sperano?
Tony Sperano?
Yeah, I think that might have been Sperano.
Maybe it was, but it's. I mean, it was a. I mean, it was. I think part of the reason it was so effective was because people hadn't seen as much of it. Now it's a little bit more familiar to folks.
Now to the point now where you don't really see the Wildcat anymore. Unbalanced lines and six man lines, like they're just not very popular.
You don't
anymore.
See a lot of stuff that tips off the run against good teams anymore, right? Oh, it feels like the moment you say we had this conversation when people were talking about, well, maybe there's a role for Robbie Ashford coming in and running gadget plays and things, and maybe there is. Like if
but
not
you
the
want
starter,
him to have the
he better be
option.
Able to do something yeah. else than that.
He should be able to throw the ball.
You can't come in and be like, all right, this is our run formation.
The only guys that have ever been able to make that work is like guys that are just unstoppable type of runners.
There were times last year Georgia could have told you they were running from 2 yards out.
Oh, sure. And I think like and doing I, anything about I it. Think back to like the Tebow package with Chris Leak at Florida, where it was just like, well, yeah, nobody was tackling him at that point. And
why his little jump pass was unstoppable too. Yep.
And even that was a novelty. Like even then, like back in 2006, you rarely saw, oh, they're going to the backup freshman who can really run to spell the established starter.
Yeah, what I get from you, Freeze, is he's more of a spread it out and out scheme you on the just getting a guy open and doing his check downs and all that. I mean, that's more probably better for the pro. I mean, preparing you for professional football than what Gus was doing.
It's a more of a spread, more of a modern spread offense. I mean, a lot of what Gus did is what they call the smash mouth spread, where you do. Yeah, and you see some of that. I think the Chiefs do a good bit of that as well. But it's again because of the talent they've got. But yeah, no, this scheme and this offense, I think, you can also throw in what Philip Montgomery did at Baylor as well. I mean, watch Tennessee. What Tennessee did last year with Josh Heupel, what they've been able to do is a lot of that has been borrowed from what Baylor did when Montgomery was there. And so there's a lot of that I think is going to become more and more prevalent, not only in the college game, but you're going to see that more in the NFL
And a lot of what Hugh Freeze was doing was, let's go get the best possible players at skill positions and on the offensive line and then run offenses that, I mean, you scheme around the fact that you don't have NFL receivers. If you go get some NFL receivers, the scheme changes a little bit.
Appreciate the call, Keith. Brett, hey, give us a call back if you get a chance. We got to get to our bottom of the hour break. 30 minutes to go here on the Thursday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes of the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. And, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. What were we getting into when Keith called? I'm sort of lost track then.
I'm just watching Shohei Ohtani over here.
Oh, you're watching Ohtani highlights?
Yeah, he's having a day, isn't he? The day after the Angels announce he's not on the market. So there goes the biggest name that might have been there.
They trade for Lucas Giolito late last night. And it's like, we're going to be buyers. We're four games out of the wild card. Let's make a run. Let's try to get him in the playoffs.
And Ohtani, who is one of the best pitchers as well as one of the best hitters in baseball, pitches the best game he's pitched as a major leaguer.
Yep, complete game shutout. They can only give up three.
One hitter.
That's one hitter. Wow.
And I think
in game two of the doubleheader, he hit two homers.
It's great that the Angels are trying to add around him.
It's great if they make the postseason. If they don't make the postseason, this is a dumb move.
I'm not sure he's staying even if they make the postseason.
Oh, I'm sure he's not.
No, I mean, I know. But at least you want to get in there.
Yeah.
At least you can say, oh, we snapped the longest drought in baseball. Because that's the thing.
But
Angels have the longest playoff drought in baseball.
I would just be
with
some
Mike
of
Trout.
The talent that they have. Right.
Mike Trout.
I'd be so
and Ohtani for these last few years.
I'd be so. I used Jared Weaver on my Immaculate Grid earlier today. As a matter of fact, shout out to a former Angels pitcher, Jared Weaver. But if you don't think he's sticking around, like I get why it's important to make the postseason or not. But the chances of being able to replenish with a player like Ohtani. What they could get for him. I mean, I was advocating for trading him last year. I was thinking what you could get for Ohtani.
Just after seeing what the Angels got for the Angels gave up for Lucas Giolito, I was like,
Well, now they're trying to buy, so they can't do it. But when the Angels had a year and a half of team control in Ohtani, it's like you could give somebody two postseasons to this guy. Like, I mean, yeah. it would have been kind of
like the Soto deal.
It might have been as valuable as Juan Soto as far as what the you know what the Padres got, or even more so, you know, depending on how he's viewed. But yeah, this is a hopefully we get to see him in the postseason. Like hopefully we get to see Ohtani and make it work. But I so who's getting dealt? Any huge names? Ohtani's off the board.
Cody Bellinger may be the big hitter. I mean, he's had a really good bounce back year. So yeah, we got Spector. We'll speculate some more on the baseball trade deadline. But let's get to Spector. Hey, Spector.
Hey, listen. Heard the news about Riddick, and social media pages lighting up good and bad on him. But that you expect something like that. But I want to ask you: when is the earliest he can sign?
It's a Wednesday in December. I don't have the date. I'm look at the calendar. I may be able to tell you, but
I think you're right. I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, it is in December, and it's usually around the 10th or so of December. But I'd have to look at the calendar.
Now, what is the possibilities of him decommitting to Auburn?
I would say they're not very likely unless something crazy happens. I mean, even I've heard some Alabama people saying, "Well, he doesn't quite fit the business mold that they like there." He talked about feeling at home at Georgia, but feeling much more home at Auburn, and he's closer to home. So, I think things he just feels like a better fit right now at Auburn.
It's usually the third Wednesday in December. Is that how they do it? Or the second to last Wednesday,
yeah,
or something?
Something
they do it that like way. That. But yeah, the 20th this year would be the date for this upcoming signing period.
I always thought it was close to Christmas. But one other thing, you guys put on your thinking caps. Whenever they started ranking high school kids, like 4 or 5 stars and stuff, I don't know how far back that goes.
Oh, it goes back a long way, but there were just one or two that did it nationally. There were more regional type folks back in the 80s when it really got cranked up. And then there started being, you know, when there started being websites that started doing it, there became more national ones. So they've become more reliable, I would say, over the last 10 to 15 years since the turn of the century, for sure.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of an Auburn coach signing a 5-star before he ever put a team on the field?
Not that I can
probably
recall.
Probably not. I mean, you know, because most Auburn coaches inherit tough situations, and you don't really start to see the And I guess if you really want to be particular about this, Hugh Freeze will have put a team on the field before Riddick signs. But to enlist, you know, to get a guy, you know,
get a commitment
committed, you mm-hmm. know, in this offseason is
Yeah, and the other thing you have to remember is that, you know, it wasn't always when you could sign in December. You know, used to be the signing day was in February.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to what my original question was. You know, like you said, Dan, that he won't sign until December, and he'll already have about 4 or 5 Auburn games under his belt before he signs. So if Auburn takes a nosedive in the first 4 or 5 games, I'm just curious about what's going to happen then.
I mean, you could see defections, I suppose, although I don't know what players committing to Auburn right now are necessarily expecting to see in the first 5 or 6 games of this season. I mean, I think they understand what Auburn is at the moment too, and hopefully the coaches have been, you know, straight about, you know, this is something that's going to take more than 4 games to see evidence of on the field.
Yeah. Well, either there, I'm excited about it, and I just hope he follows through. And it's a good start.
Oh, no question about that.
All right, guys. Have a nice evening.
Appreciate it, Spector. Yeah, I mean, that's sure, nothing is a done deal until the players sign. And now, of course, nowadays with the transfer portal, even then, there's no guarantee that they're going to play a lot, if any.
But you want to be landing as many of the you know the aircraft carriers.
You want to be landing as many of the top biggest prospects.
The biggest possible options on the board. 334-321-1390. All right, so Scherzer and Verlander possibly getting traded there.
I think so.
Yeah, it's another reason why a guy we know probably looking to unload Verlander. I think those would be pieces where the Mets think. I think the Mets and the Padres are both teams where they could decide to unload, but they still want to be contenders next year. So it's about trading stuff that doesn't factor too heavily into next year's plans. Could the Mets get something that helps them next year for Verlander right now? It's an interesting question. Would a contender want a Verlander or a Scherzer right now and be willing to give up something that would potentially help a major league team next year?
I'm going to be happy about this Mets season for a very, very long time. Just the fact that they have the biggest payroll in baseball history and they're 7 games under .500 right now is.
I mean, they could try it again next year.
They're like, math will tell you that they're not going to be this bad again, but I'm going to enjoy the fact that they are this bad. And it's just going to be interesting to see, like, you know, for Verlander, like, who do you want to give? What do you want to get? What do you want to get? And what are you going to be asking in return for it, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because he's 40. How many more years is he going to want to go out there and do this? Is he going to be able to go out
there?
Do
both of them have options? Are they going to be free agents this year?
I don't think Scherzer is. I think, I think Verlander signed a one-year deal, didn't he? Or was it, I don't know.
Verlander is under contract next year. It was a two-year, $87 million deal the Mets gave him.
Ooh, that's a lot of money for somebody to be paying a 41-year-old next year.
$35 million player option for 2025.
He ain't necessarily Tom Brady.
So in theory, a team that trades for Justin Verlander will pay him the rest of this year's salary.
And then 40-something million and 35.
And potentially he could pick up player option in 25.
They could be on the hook for close to $100 million to get a 40-year-old
Cy Young Verlander this year.
No, or I mean, Cy he pitched great Scherzer last night against the Yankees. But, I mean, he's striking out batters at the lowest rate of his career.
Right.
He's almost like he's 41. Yeah.
You know, like, stuff's not necessarily what it used to be anymore.
The Mets also, for a team that envisions themselves as contenders moving forward, like Scherzer and Verlander are, I mean, they are the nuts and bolts of that rotation. I mean, you got Cody Senga, Kodai Senga, but, like, you know, that's not a I mean, he's the only thing that they can feel good.
No, because they're going to trade Jose Quintana too.
Yeah, Senga's the one guy you think will be in the rotation next year if Verlander and Scherzer aren't. So yeah, those would be pieces. I'm curious to see if somebody goes and gets Verlander, especially because, like you said, the money that it would be owed to Verlander.
Who else do they still have in that rotation?
The Mets.
Taijuan Walker still there?
Yes, yeah. he's been their most consistent guy.
Probably so, and they had a.
Like McGill and Lucchesi?
McGill, yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler McGill.
Terrible. Those guys. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's part of the reason the Mets are 7 games under .500.
Well,
yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, they got – and, again, I hate the Mets, but the blow of losing Edwin Diaz before the season started was crazy.
Robertson, watch him get traded. He has been really good. Yeah, I mean, it's not like
the Mets can't, like, save games. Well, like, when the Braves had that wild comeback earlier this year, it had been the first time in forever that they had blown a save or blown a –
The problem for the Mets is they wanted David Robertson to be their guy to get them to Edwin Diaz. Who's getting them to David Robertson?
Nobody.
They don't have that.
They don't have it
I mean,
all.
Their starters are struggling. They don't have anybody to get them to Robertson.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see who would be willing to give up what to – you know, get a guy like Scherzer.
I wouldn't be stunned to see the Braves get David Robertson.
Scherzer is.
I liked the moves they made. I know Justin Lawrence didn't necessarily cover himself in glory last night, but, you know, I did like that move. Just getting guys that you feel like in a better situation, you could see where the numbers are there.
I wonder if the Mets trade in division. Maybe it won't matter to them if they're out of it.
I don't know. I mean, if they're out of it, they might feel like, hey, we get somebody who can help us in a couple of years.
Hey, if you're
there have been Marlins Mets deals in the past. So, I mean.
If you're the Angels, do you look at Scherzer or Verlander? And just say, this is literally their window. This is our window.
Yeah, if you're going to go for it, Go for it. And you may not have to give up as much to get a guy that, you know, the spark comes back. And neither one of them has been bad by any means.
But if you're trying to get into the playoffs, if you're just trying to get into the playoffs and knowing that Shohei's probably gone. But, like, that's the thing is, like, if Ohtani walks this year, like everybody pretty much knows he's going to, you still have Mike Trout. You still have, like, like, oh, dang, you lost Ohtani. You'll only have to settle for the second best player on the planet. And, like, you can at least do something around that. I don't know how, because they haven't been able to do it for the past decade.
They've been thinking that for the last 10 years.
It's not like it's
some
not
point
like
he's going to retire.
But it's not like if Ohtani, they're left with nothing. It's not like when a superstar walks away or gets traded from a team where it's like, oh, well.
It's crushing, though. I mean, the thought that they'll be better. I mean, teams have gotten better the year after a star left, right? The Giants won a couple of titles after Barry Bonds retired.
I just think
Mariners won 100-something games a year after they traded
A-Rod. It's not like a situation like when the Rockies decided to trade Arenado. And it was like, well, we're not going to keep him around, and this is going to be it. It wasn't like the Rockies still had an elite player behind them. Like, at least for the Angels,
they had a pretty
good
shortstop for a little bit. They had Trevor Story.
I'd tear it all down this offseason if I were the Angels. If Ohtani walks, like, I mean, maybe you keep Trout to keep attendance up, but, like, you're not going to be good, like, soon without Ohtani.
Man, would Trout command on it?
Yeah.
Because he's still on a long deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Trade him to the Dodgers. But Ohtani and Trout can both play there.
But I do.
Hey, the Dodgers are trying to get Arenado.
Arenado is the new rumor.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think if you're the Angels, though, it's just like,
so Scherzer's not under contract next year. Scherzer's a player option.
Okay, he'd be the one. I need one of them. Yeah.
So Scherzer's got he's $44 million player option that he could exercise.
Scherzer's played in Los Angeles before.
If Scherzer were dealt to the Angels, I wonder if he picks up that option or if he tests the market in free agency, especially if Ohtani leaves. I wonder if Scherzer thinks
he'd probably rather be on a more sure thing.
Verlander under contract for next year and then a $35 million player option in 25.
That's a little much.
It's a
little much.
Or you do it if you go get Ohtani, or sorry, if you go get either Verlander or Scherzer, the other option you can go do is if I'm either the Rays or the Orioles, and I think, hey, like if I'm the Rays, I kept saying when it was like, could Ohtani get traded? If I'm the Rays, I would just say this might be it. Like, this might be our best chance to win a title.
People forget how the Rays can find money when they really want. I mean, they offered. I think the Rays had the third best offer on the board for Freddie Freeman after the Braves and the Dodgers. I mean, it was.
I think if you're the Rays, if you traded for a Scherzer or a Verlander, and their rotation is nasty at that point, and then like they have the prospects to move. Like they have the young guys they can move if that's what the Mets want in return.
I wonder if the Rays reunite with Blake Snell. I wonder if that's the pitcher, former Ray, Blake Snell, won a Cy Young in Tampa.
Snell's really on an expiring as well.
Free agent, could be a rental, could be a team that's maybe not thinking. Although
they're only a game or two out of the wild card right now.
There are people who, I mean, they're one of the services that projects as the Padres with a greater than 50% chance of making the postseason, which makes me wonder if they're not trading. In that case,
they better catch up.
Hader and Snell would probably not be on the trade market.
Yeah, they've got a tough decision.
Are they in or not?
Yeah,
because if not, there would be someone who wants a piece of.
I think when you have that much, for me, with the Padres, if you have that much talent and there's still a shot, you go for it.
I think so.
Because at least with the Angels, it was like the Angels were like, well, we haven't been good. Like even with this talent, like at least with the Padres, you're like. They were in the NLCS last year.
I've believed that the Padres would eventually pass the Giants all season long, but the longer it goes, it's tougher.
Nobody
to be
believes
like,
in the Giants ever.
Ever. They won 100. I know. They won 100 and something games 2 years ago. With
108
the team.
Or 107. 100,
yeah, 108 games. It was like, yeah, we'll see. And they ran to the Dodgers and went 5 in the, you know what I mean? So it's like,
And it's like the Giants don't have, like, they don't have stars anymore.
No.
Like, they have... It is just a team. It is just dudes
bunch. I mean, it's a lot of them platoon.
Yeah,
they're amazing. Hey, we need to get to our final break. We will wrap things up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
You can help others in your community.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Wrapping things up here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Yeah, we went in a bunch of different directions. Appreciate the calls that we had. And Justin, we've got about a minute or so. Once again, the Auburn Observer, I mean, people would think, oh, it's a slow time. It's not a slow time. Had a big commitment yesterday. Got Big Cat coming up. Practice gets started next week.
Yep. AuburnObserver.com. Big day tomorrow. We've got a mailbag and a podcast. We'll talk Big Cat. We'll talk recruiting. There's a breakdown of DeMarcus Riddick that you can check out on the site. And then next week we are jumping right back in it. And it's going to be a perfect time to sign up. Everything we do gets emailed to your inbox. So practice reports, all of our podcasts, all the stuff we do, you get it as soon as it comes out to your inbox. You don't have to go to a link or you don't have to, you know, go to a site or anything like that. Once you're in, and it's the perfect time to jump on.
Yeah, no question. It is about to get there. And yeah, we'll speaking of high school, yeah, we're gonna get Scott Bagwell on here pretty soon as we're getting closer and closer to high school football as well.
People have been asking, Auburn high school football will still be on Wings 94.3.
That's right.
We're gonna add the Auburn football, Auburn University football games, the Auburn University Sports Network. You know, that's coming to Wings 94.3, AU100 as well, Tiger Talk.
So it'll be Tiger Talk Thursday nights, high school Auburn High football Friday nights, and Auburn University football on Saturdays on Wings.
That's right. Get ready, Drew.
That's going to do it for the Thursday drive. Dan and I back with you tomorrow. Drew, have a good weekend. Drew heading to...
Wait, what?
Heading down to the Gulf. Yep. Drew's out tomorrow.
You're on the board tomorrow.
Yeah. So who knows? It's going to just automate tomorrow. No, I think Carter said he'd come in and hang with us tomorrow. Hope you'll join us then, though. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.